Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we preview Wisconsin Public Television's soon-to-be-released production of Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau, an hour-long documentary that looks at the history of the logging community that used to be called Big Bull Falls, looks at the early pioneers like August Kickbush and Walter McIndoe, the logging barons who formed the Wausau Group and created a new regional economy based on paper, insurance, medical care, education, and the arts. The New Deal government workers who cleared the side of Rib Mountain and created today's ski hill and tourism industry. The Fromm brothers who pioneered the cultivation of ginseng and turned Marathon County into the world's fur center. The early aviation pioneers. The women who formed a literary society and spearheaded the city's commitment to the arts, and the changes brought about by the Hmong migration of the past 30 years. Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau, will be shown on Wisconsin Public Television Monday evening, January 24th. And next Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, January 19th, the public, that means all of you, are invited to two free screenings at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Grand Theater. Joining us today from Madison, producer David Hestad of Wisconsin Public Television, and here in our studios, Gary Gisselman of the Wausau Historical Society and UW-Marathon County Associate Professor of History, Brett Barker, who each played roles in the production. If you would like to join the conversation, please feel free to do so at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. David, this was quite a production, and you spent a lot of time on it.
Well, it is a labor-intensive process, and we had to sort of sift and winnow our way through, you know, over, well, since the history since 1838, and squeeze it all down into an hour.
And Wausau is not being singled out here. There are other communities that are also part of this series on Wisconsin Public Television.
That's correct. This is part of a series called Wisconsin Hometown Stories, and it... This would be number five. We started out with Janesville, and we've done one on Green Bay, La Crosse, Manitowoc and Two Rivers, and now Wausau.
Gary Gisselman, what do you think it is about Wausau that makes this community so unique here in north central Wisconsin? I know that's a very broad question, but I'd like you to give me a brief answer.
Well, I think it's the history, the people, I think the people, the threat of the people throughout the history of Wausau that has really given its unique character, from the immigrants to the labor barons to the current civic leaders. Everybody really has given a unique character to this city, and I think that that's what adds to the city's history, really.
Brett Barker, same question to you.
Yeah, I would agree with what Gary said. I'd also add that I think you'll see this in the production, the river itself, too. I think the Wisconsin River is a continuing theme that has shaped and defined this community and its people over time.
David, there was it a Robert Redford movie, A River Runs Through It? River Runs Through Wausau, and that certainly is a dominant theme in this hour-long documentary you've produced.
Well, I was advised by people like Brett that, that is really the reason for being of the city. And so, you know, and one of the things we try to do is establish, you know, how did this happen? Why is Wausau where it is? And, you know, and just the most basic questions, how did it get there? Why is it there? And it's really there because of the river.
You start with the river and you end with the river in this documentary, and we're going to play a series of short clips that I've taken from the documentary as sort of a jumping off point for discussion. So we're going to start out with a look at the Wisconsin River and the logging community. And David, I kind of chopped this first segment up a little bit for the radio, so please don't be too mad at me, but we'll join the conversation after we hear this very first segment of Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau.
When you really talk about the founding of Wausau, it is above all else about the river. Big Bull Falls, which was the original name, was a large drop in the Wisconsin River that created power, but at the time it was wild. Supposedly the falls could be heard from miles away, both Big Bull Falls here, Little Bull Falls, and what's now Mozumie.
And then in addition, of course, to altering the river so that you could better utilize its power, you had to also move these log rafts on the river. And that was formidable.
But when these cribs would go over a rapids, it would be quite common that the whole crib and the people would disappear for a few seconds the first time. In other words, it would cover up the top of their heads. And they would bob up, hopefully, and carry on. A good share of them were young, inexperienced people. They couldn't swim. In a period of about a week at Wausau, 17 men drowned in the area of Big Bull Falls.
17 men drowning in just a couple of days at the community that used to be called Big Bull Falls.
Well, it was dangerous work, and it was wild. I mean, people, and the river was very wild also. You wouldn't really know it to look at it today.
Well, David, you had a challenge trying to show what that river looked like, considering that it doesn't look like that anymore. How did you do that?
That's right. Well, it was a combination of a lot of things and some luck. We worked with the power company, WPS, and I was trying to figure out a way to show that, because we've kind of shown that in other programs, given people a sort of a feeling for the geography of the area, the original vegetation, or the way things looked. And and I found there is one spot on the river where it's the old river channel. Up, it's north of Merrill, and it's called Grandfather Falls. And it and from time to time, water is released into the old channel, and you can see it.
It's a beautiful stretch of the river. Great smallmouth bass fishing up there too.
Yeah. So, and then we just happened to, for one reason or another, it kept getting postponed, and then we finally did the shooting in the fall, and it was right when the floodwaters were coming down from up north to go down to Portage area, and so there was a lot of water going through this old channel.
The lumber industry really made this town, but it was a pretty rough town at first, and we had a couple of pioneers, the ones that stick out, the early ones, August Kickbush and Walter McIndoe. Gary?
Well, these two, one, Walter McIndoe, being called the father, really, of the city of Wausau, his great influence in forming the city and the county was a great influence. Lumber baron, early lumber baron, and then, of course, August Kickbush, a German immigrant, influential in bringing the starting of the German immigration into Marathon County.
Tell us that story.
Of August Kickbush?
Yeah, how he went back to Germany?
August Kickbush walked up from Milwaukee with a load of merchandise, came up in the early days, eventually came to realize that Wausau needed a lot of workers because of the lumber industry. He decided to go back to northern Germany, bring back a boat full of German immigrants from Pomerania, and most of them settling in Marathon County, Wausau. So that started, in a way, the early German immigration. Those early immigrants that August Kickbush brought to Marathon County wrote back to Germany, and thus the continual flow of German immigrants into Marathon County.
And Pomeranian is still spoken as a dialect in portions of Marathon and Portage County.
Yes, indeed it is, and specifically up in northwestern Marathon County, it is spoken.
Still a Pomeranian society that keeps that alive, the culture alive, and the language, and supposedly today, one of the best ways to really understand and to hear the Pomeranian dialect is really in Marathon County, Wisconsin, not in Pomerania anymore, as German has become standardized back in Germany.
And as the northern forests were depleted, as these great white pine forests were cut down, Wausau benefited from a group of very visionary leaders, competitors, who decided to cooperate, a group that was informally known as the Wausau Group, and they began the city's early paper industry.
The process used in paper manufacture up to about the 1880s or so had been primarily the use of rags and fabrics to manufacture paper. And by the 1890s, the new wood-based technology had just begun to develop.
With the help of papermakers from the Fox River Valley, the Wausau Group built a paper mill at Brokaw, 5 miles upriver. For the 175 mill workers, they built a company town with a company store.
What the Wausau Group does is not unusual in the larger economic history of the period, where you have people who potentially were competitors in a market cooperating.
The Wausau Group soon built another mill at Mosinee, which quickly brought new life to the community. In nearby Rothschild, the group built their biggest mill, the Marathon Paper Company. Construction on the huge project, which included a 450-foot dam, proceeded with the help of only one steam shovel. Workers completed the rest of the job by horse or by hand.
And David, there are some wonderful historical photographs accompanying that segment. How did you access those photos?
I think all of the photos in that section were from the Marathon County Historical Society. And so we acquired them from them, and Gary helped me to find them.
And Gary and Brett, the Wausau Group, the influence of these men with their pioneering vision, it can't really be understated in terms of how it created the city of Wausau as it exists today and made this community different than a lot of old river cities that simply dried up once the lumber was depleted.
It was quite unusual, and I think that at this one specific period in Wausau's history, that these people, a lot of people, came together that had money, that had vision, that were smart. D.C. Everest, Cyrus Yawkey, Neil Brown, they all came together at one period in our history to really formulate Wausau into the 20th century, and I think that this is quite unusual for a lot of cities to have this, and we were very fortunate at that time to have these leaders that contributed this to the city.
And I think it's unusual, too, that they really saw. I think they were one of the things that they're really visionary about is I think that they saw that the white pine was going to give out, that Wausau could not continue on the same trajectory forever. And if they wanted to maintain a place, as you said, not become a ghost town, essentially, that they would have to diversify the economy and they would have to find more reasons for Wausau to continue to exist.
And these were wealthy men. They could have moved on. They didn't have to settle here, but they decided to settle here and to create a community with a diversified economy. It wasn't just the paper mills, but they started the insurance industry.
Right.
You're listening to a special edition of Route 51. We're previewing a new Wisconsin Public Television show on Wausau, Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau. It will be shown the evening of Monday, January 24th, and then next Wednesday, January 19th, two free screenings, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Grand Theater. The public is invited. We have David Hestad, who is the producer of the show, and also Wausau historians Brett Barker and Gary Gisselman. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
Let's pick up the story of the hometown of Wausau, and let's look at the ski hill. Of course, the ski hill of Rib Mountain is something that as you drive down from the north on Highway 51, you see this beautiful panorama of all the lights in the ski trail. 74 runs open this weekend on Granite Peak. But very few people know that that ski hill and the tourism industry that exists today wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for a federal government program, the Civilian Conservation Corps of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal.
The federal government set up a camp for the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, which put the unemployed to work developing the state park at Rib Mountain, just outside Wausau.
So I went into the CC camp, then I got $30 a month, and $25 went to my mama, and $5 went to me.
They were looking for something for the CCC boys to do. So they said, well, let's have a ski area on the north side of Rib Mountain. So they got the CCC boys to clear the trees in certain areas to make trails.
There's a lot of rock there. That's all rock. So we had to level that off a little bit. We had a sledgehammer, and you pound on a rock till you break them smaller, and they could ski on that then when the snow come. And then they built the shelter house. We got all the stone, and then the masoners did their work, and we had to carry the rock to them. You worked pretty hard.
The Depression in Wausau and those Civilian Conservation Corps camps kept food on the table and created a whole industry.
That's right, and many young men, of course, it wasn't just in Wausau, it's a national program, but many young men went to a CCC camp, whether it was in Wausau, it was a large one near Rhinelander, and that's right, a lot of those young men sent, as that person in the clip we heard there, sent money home to family, and that helped them make it through the toughest years of the Depression.
It must have been such grueling work, taking sledgehammers and trying to clear those huge boulders on the side of the mountain in order to create the ski runs.
Well, it was really hard work, but I think that the people realized that the program was really going to be beneficial for them. And I think that the park department in Wausau, the whole community came together really realizing that the CCC men really were working hard there, and they really wanted to do a good job and to create a new industry in the city. Skiing.
And when you think of everything that we've got in Wausau connected to that ski hill now, the tourism, the 74 runs, people coming here from all over the Midwest, the restaurants, the hotels and motels, which are booked during the winter. You know, not to make too much of a political point, but the next time anybody tells you that the government doesn't create jobs, just point at Rib Mountain and that lit up ski hill, because none of that would exist today if it wasn't for the government and the New Deal.
The business leaders, I think, in cooperation with the CCC and the Park Department, like I said before, really came to realize that this may be a new industry in the city. And I think that they were looking for tourism. Remember, this was in the middle of the Great Depression. And I think that they were just looking for more avenues to create tourist attractions. Eventually, there would be trains coming up from Chicago, ski trains that would be feeding the Wausau tourist industry. And I think that this has really been developing into a great tourist attraction through the years, all because of the CCC camps in the early years of the Depression.
David Hestad, your reflections on that ski hill.
I think one other thing we might want to mention is that's not in the show is that they did a lot of work on the park itself and built some of the structures that are still there, the shelter houses, and they laid out the trail system in the park. And you can see, you know, a lot of that wasn't so easy to do either. If you go up there, it's you know, they had to cut through some of the rock and level it out and build steps. And so if you go there, you can still see what they had done there.
I want to keep things moving. We're getting perilously close to news time, so we're going to pick up on a pioneering family called the Fromm Brothers, which pioneered the ginseng industry and also helped turn central Wisconsin into the world's fur center.
they began their fur business by capturing red fox kits in the forest and raising them in captivity, hoping to earn enough money to buy some silver fox.
Their father thought it was a stupid thing because he was not interested in it, and he thought, how could they even think about this? And so, but they kept on, and finally he said, well, if you want to earn some money, you can raise ginseng.
The Fromms began by gathering plants from the forest. They pioneered new ways to shade the fields and developed new techniques to process the seeds and roots.
And it wasn't as profitable right away. So one day when their father was out of town, they went to their mother and they asked her, how can we get this money? And so she decided that she would mortgage her part of the land for $6,500, and they were able to buy a pair of silver foxes.
As they did with ginseng, the Fromm brothers pioneered new ways to raise foxes, including releasing them into the forest to grow in a natural environment.
And one of the outstanding things I think that they did was to give $3 for every silver fox they raised for research. And their researchers were able to come up with the encephalitis vaccine and also the distemper vaccine.
The story of the Fromm brothers, the cultivation of ginseng, the fur industry, and boy, they even developed these vaccines that are still in use today.
That's right. And I think that's actually one of my favorite little bits in the program, is just that moment where they're faced with trying to decide, you know, how do we go for this, what seemed to be an absurd dream.
And they create a whole new industry. David, you've got to hold it right there because we've got a break for news, but we're going to talk about this when we come back. Wisconsin's Hometown Stories, Wausau. We'll be back with more after this news. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg, and we are previewing today a new Wisconsin Public Television documentary, Wisconsin's Hometown Stories, Wausau, which will be shown on WPT Monday evening, January 24th. And want to let you know again that this Wednesday, January 19th, all of you, the public, invited to two free screenings at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Grand Theater. We're playing clips from the new documentary, and we're talking to producer David Hestad, who is on the phone from Madison, and a couple of Wausau historians, Gary Gisselman of the Wausau Historical Society, and also UW-Marathon County Associate Professor of History, Brett Barker. David, when we were so rudely interrupted by the news break, we were talking about the Fromm brothers, the fact that this one rural family in Hamburg, in Marathon County, not only revolutionized and created the ginseng market, but they also made Hamburg, Marathon County, for a while, the center of the world fur industry.
That's right. It's just it's an unbelievable story, and it's just a story of raw perseverance, I think. You know, what I was saying before was that there's a moment in the story where they don't have the money to buy some silver foxes, which were tremendously expensive. And their father said, well, you know, you can always try to grow ginseng, which a few people were trying to do, but nobody had ever really done it. So they're kind of, you know, trading one sort of pipe dream high-risk operation for another, and they happen to be highly successful in both of them.
I read a book on the Fromm brothers, and Dad apparently made the sons clear the North 40, which was strewn with boulders and rocks and impediments, and that was their ginseng farm. And they managed to bring all of these plants in from the woods, figure out how to shade them. Really, it's quite a story.
It's really a story of ingenuity, I think, all around in both ginseng and furs. I think that the brothers, to figure out how to cultivate ginseng, but also the techniques they used to develop the silver foxes, but also things like when they were losing an unacceptable number to distemper, to have a veterinarian come in and to develop the canine distemper vaccine.
And so, those vaccines are
still in use today. Still is probably what's keeping your dog safe to this very day.
And they've taken that old center in Hamburg and turned it into a resort and a conference area. But at one point in time, they brought the entire New York fur auction into rural Marathon County. I don't know who wants to pick up
on that. Well, they were the Farm Brothers were advertising around the world, really, and people and the fur market came to Wausau, to Hamburg, to be a part of their marketing process. And I think when we talk about the Farm Brothers, it's another one of those stories where at one specific period in time, some genius people, what I refer to as very smart people, happened to be in Marathon County and put Marathon County right on the map, right then and there. This stick-to-itiveness, and it didn't happen overnight. I mean, you read the story of the Farm Brothers, it took them a long time, but they had the stick-to-itiveness to really stick with the project. They knew what they wanted to do. They had the smarts to go out and do it. And that's one of the unique stories that I think comes out of Marathon County.
And some of this hasn't been documented for sure, but we have it on some good authority that some of the top celebrities of the 40s and 50s, people like Marlene Dietrich and Albert Einstein, may have even made it to Hamburg for one of those auctions.
I've not heard that story, but that's quite unique, and I think we'll investigate that. I think
it's in one of the books. They found a name tag for Albert Einstein when they were going through the through the archives.
Well, very good. Yeah. We'll have to investigate that. It's an interesting story.
We have ginseng. We have the fur business. We have paper mills. We also have the insurance business, and we have the Wausau Insurance Company finding a new image and also finding a new identity for the city of Wausau due to an advertising campaign.
The very first ad in the Wausau story ran in the Saturday Evening Post in 1954. The artwork itself was Wausau at night, stars up in the sky, two, three people on the platform waiting for the train, and across the roof of the depot in big bold letters was the name Wausau. The depot illustration was never intended at the outset to be a corporate logo, but very quickly the company and the depot almost became synonymous.
Employers Insurance of Wausau has to make some pretty touchy decisions.
And they turned to television in 1968. There was a new news magazine, they called it, starting up, called 60 Minutes. And it was the audience we were looking for.
The word is Wausau, a small town in Wisconsin.
As one of the first advertisers on 60 Minutes and one of the most consistent advertisers on 60 Minutes, Wausau Insurance essentially owned Sunday night as far as insurance advertising was concerned, and that was huge.
W-A-U-S-A-U. There's a USA in the middle, a WA up front,
and another U in back.
That's Wausau.
Thank you.
As in Wausau Insurance Companies.
That's fine.
The business insurance expert.
Thank you.
David, just a delightful story to add to the mix.
Yeah, I think anyone, I guess, of a certain age probably remembers that specific ad, because it was very famous at the time, and I think a lot of people still remember those ads.
Well, indeed, to talk about how iconic that Wausau Depot sign was, I was born and raised in Ohio and went to graduate school in Madison. When I came up to interview for the job, I'd never been to Wausau before, and when they gave me a tour of the city, I said to the person driving, I said, I want to go see the Wausau Depot, because to me that is Wausau. And so we drove over and found it, because I wanted to see that, as that is the reason I knew of Wausau, Wisconsin, growing up, and I remember those ads quite well.
Gary, what's the real Wausau Depot? We've got that one by the Wisconsin River as you approach the mall. We've got one on the east side, and we've got one on the west side. What's the real one?
The one off of Grand Street is the, they superimpose the Grand Street Depot onto a looking east from the west side. So it's really a mix really of the depot as well as the skyline of the city of Wausau.
Right. That's the old Milwaukee Road Depot. The one down on the river is the old Chicago Northwestern Depot. So, but they're both depots, but the iconic one is, your, as you said, one, the Milwaukee Road Depot on Grand Street.
Our guests today, historians Gary Gisselman and Brett Barker, and Wisconsin Public Television producer David Hestad. We are previewing Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau. And let's pick up on another chapter of Wausau's history that proved divisive, but ultimately very valuable for the city's cultural diversity.
As the Hmong themselves began to sponsor more refugees, and family members in other cities moved to Wausau, the population grew quickly, and tensions in the city escalated.
I think it wasn't until around fifth or sixth grade did I start experiencing any kind of racial tension. One of my best friends, she just out of nowhere told me, why don't you go back to your own country? And I sat there and I thought, okay, all my life I've grown up in the U.S. That's all I've known. What do you mean to go back to my own country?
The older generations, such as my grandparents, they still have this feeling that they will go back to Laos one day. My parents kind of accepted that they're not going to go back. For us, younger generation, we don't want to go back.
And I would tell the community at large, see, the Hmong's no exception. It's probably just like the rest of the immigrations, the German, the Polish, that initially when they first got here, they still live in a very close-knit Polish community or German community. Their grandma, grandpa still speak German or Polish, but with time, that's not going to happen.
As the Hmong celebrate their heritage at the annual New Year Festival, they now make up 12% of Wausau's 38,500 residents, the highest percentage of Hmong in the nation.
I've lived in the Wausau area since 1993, and I have seen a real striking diminishing of the racial tension and the ethnic tension that seemed to exist here when I moved up here. I think we're all making this work.
The history, though, at one time, my goodness, it was on 60 Minutes. There was a story on 60 Minutes with regard to the immigration of the Hmongs into the Wausau area.
Morley Safer. I was working at Channel 7 at the time at the CBS affiliate, and we feated Morley. He came up. We had a big banquet for him and shrimp and all of this other stuff. And then he went out and did this hatchet job on the city of Wausau.
And a major article in the Atlantic magazine, it put Wausau on the map at that time. But as you say, I think we've come a long way with regard to the Hmong immigration
into
Wausau.
And that Morley Safer piece, there was this one shot of everyone at the welfare office and the snide comment, and they never miss a check. But if you look at, David, at your documentary, there's an interview with Peter Yang of the Hmong Mutual Association talking about how as Wausau employers and businesses began to hire Hmong people, they discovered what hard workers they are.
Well, that's right. I think, that probably Morley Safer came at just about, the peak of the hard time, I think, there. And, I think any time you would have that large of a immigration into a city, there's bound to be some problems. And that's what happened. But I think that you have seen quite a remarkable integration into the community.
And much like the river, I think the story of immigration is another part of the Wausau story. I mean, if you had been in Wausau in the late 1800s, you would have heard people saying, oh, those Germans, they stick to themselves, they don't learn the language. They aren't fitting in. They aren't going to make good citizens. That story about new immigrants is a continuing struggle as people adapt, and it's a continuing story. And I think that the Hmong story of the late 20th century is very similar in some ways. The German immigration earlier waves that over time become part of the sort of mosaic of this country and this county.
I agree. Whether it be the German immigration, the Polish immigration, Wausau certainly has experienced waves of immigration into this community. And I think that the Hmong and now the Hispanic population is just a continuation of that immigration wave into the community. And
many of the Hmong people, having this harrowing escape from Laos, swimming across the Mekong River, being shot at by Vietnamese gunboats, losing their families en route, and then showing up here wearing tropical clothing in January in northern Wisconsin, not knowing a word of English, not knowing how to read it, not knowing how to speak it. And now they're bankers. They're running they're human resource coordinators at some of the major companies in town. It's really quite a story.
And they continue to be the hardworking population that has been known to Wausau for a long time. Since I think Wausau is known for its hardworking folk, and I think that, like you say, the Hmong population is continuing that trend.
We're talking to historians Gary Gisselman and Brett Barker, and also Wisconsin Public Television producer David Hestad, as we continue to preview Wisconsin's hometown stories, Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of the station. Thanks very much.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. And what would the story of hometown Wausau be without a really extraordinary commitment to the arts, including the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum and its annual extravaganza, Birds in Art?
The hope was that, well, if a few hundred people came, wouldn't that be marvelous? And some 8 weeks later, 8,000 people had come. And so, it's not rocket science. Our visitors like this. Let's do it again.
Now in its fourth decade, the exhibit Birds in Art draws artists from around the world. And with its founder's commitment to free admission, the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum helped make Wausau a regional and international center for the arts. The Wausau spirit of community building continued in the 1980s with an effort to renovate the Grand Theater, an aging movie house and performance center in downtown Wausau.
There were movements to break it up. There were movements to tear it down. But the community rallied behind it, raised $2.2 million to restore the plaster work, redo the rigging and electrical systems, and they reopened it in 1987 as a performing arts center.
Those voices, Jim O'Connell of the Performing Arts Center, the Grand Theater, and Kathy Kelsey Foley of the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. And David, in the documentary, you talk about how the commitment to the arts came early in Wausau's history, thanks to some visionary ladies who formed a literary society and also a book publishing company.
That's right. We tried to trace that back. It's kind of a, Wausau has a remarkably strong set of community institutions, and they seem to be able to, support those and start new projects. And so we just tried to trace it back through time and see, how did this happen? And one of the ways was through some of the early women's groups that started in the 1870s. And the Ladies Literary Society was more than just, sort of reading great books. They took on civic projects and put up things like street signs and got a woman police officer hired by the city. And so there's just was a lot of activity and a lot of interest in building the community. And I guess the one of the people that was in that society, Helen Van Vechten, ran a print shop in a log cabin and had a group of people that kind of followed her, and she printed art books, I guess you would call them, hand printed books in the arts and crafts style, very beautiful books. And she was also one of the people that helped raise money for the new library, the first library. So a lot of this was all interconnected, but there's a lot of community spirit.
It was called the Philosopher Press?
The Philosopher Press, yes.
It was exactly as Dave was saying, the Philosopher Press, in a little log cabin here on the east side of the Milwaukee Road Depot, on the east side of Wausau, a unique institution. The Historical Society has some of its books, rare books today. But again, as David said, really carrying forth with the Wausau spirit, a unique group of people, whether it be Helen Van Vechten or the Literary Society, a unique group of people that really just started this Wausau spirit, specifically speaking to the cultural aspect of Wausau that carried it through into the Grand Theater and into the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. A unique set of people through this over a century that really created a great cultural center in central Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think for its size, I think that Wausau, and partly that is the legacy of the Wausau Group and the foundations that came out of the Wausau Group and others. Still, there's a tremendous spirit of generosity and of giving. The Marathon County Historical Society that Gary works for now, and I'm on the board of directors, could not have done the Yawkey House renovation without community support. We had some grants from foundations, but this community has been extremely generous in helping preserve its history as well.
And of course, the Yawkey of Lee Yawkey Woodson is Cyrus Yawkey, one of these lumber barons going back to going back to the turn of the century, who created this diversified economy. This commitment to the arts goes back so far in Wausau's history, and that has to be unusual for a community of this size located in really a rural area of the state.
Well, it comes back, and that this set of people, Cyrus Yawkey coming in the late 1890s being one of them, who I think was perhaps the brains of changing the community's focus away from sawmills into this new economy, was part of the, this Wausau group, this Wausau spirit that was really committed and through the century gave a lot of money to a variety of good causes, cultural causes, including the Grand Theater eventually, but really was a great part of the Wausau spirit.
And continue to, the Alexander Foundation being another example, right?
Mm-hmm. And always a river runs through it. And David, that's how you end the program. Let's play a clip from the very end of Wisconsin's Hometown Stories, Wausau.
The spirit of the Wausau Group can be seen in the parklands they left for the community, some along the river that first gave rise to their wealth. Changes in Wausau's skyline reflect new growth on the riverside, as new uses are found for the old industrial sites that once lined the banks.
One of the things that really anchors, I think, the history of Wausau is the Wisconsin River. It still tells the story of 1839 when George Stevens came up, started his first sawmill. It still tells the story of a variety of other people that have come and made Wausau what it is. And I think that anchor is the Wisconsin River that continues to flow down this wonderful city.
David Hestad, you did a marvelous job. Are we going to see you in town next Wednesday?
Yes, I will be there, and I hope that everyone who's listening can come.
And again, that's next Wednesday, two free showings at the Grand Theater. Brett Barker, Gary Gisselman, thanks so much for being with us. We covered just about everything. We didn't talk about the aviation history, and we're out of time, so you're going to have to watch the show if you want to look at aviation pioneer John Wood and how he helped put Wausau on the map. We want to thank Wisconsin Public Television producer David Hestad and Wausau historians Gary Gisselman, the Marathon County Historical Society, and Dr. Brett Barker of UW-Marathon County. Wisconsin's Hometown Stories Wausau, shown on Wisconsin Public Television Monday evening, January 24th, and next Wednesday, January 19th, in two showings at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m., free showings at the Grand Theater. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, and thanks as always to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday, a very special show. It's our first program from our new studios in the Center for Civic Engagement building at UW-Marathon County, and we will have as our guest harmonica virtuoso, recording star, and blues pioneer Corky Siegel, who will join us for an hour of conversation and live music. Reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Until next time, we are heading out of town.